Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. Excited today to have my guest, Sean Lovejoy, join us for the show. Sean, welcome.
Hey, man. Great to be here. Great to be with you.
Thank you for sitting down with us. All right, I'm going to introduce you, Sean, and then I'm going to let you take it away. But Sean's the founder and CEO of CourageToLead.com. His heart beats for coaching leaders and helping them all conquer whatever's keeping them up at night. Sean has been a real estate developer, a church planner, a mega church pastor, and now CEO of a fast-growing coaching organization. His heart beats quick for leadership, personal growth, and organizational health, and helping people accomplish their momentum. A perfect fit for what this show is all about. And finally, he's been married for 25 years to his best friend, Trisha. They have three half-grown kids, Hannah, Madison, and Paul. They all live right here in Birmingham, Alabama. I am not going to say the last thing that's on his intro. I will say War Eagle, though. Sean, welcome. Tell us, for those who aren't familiar with you, just who you are, what you're about, how you got to where you are in your life now, which is coaching other leaders. And yeah, catch us up.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons you and I relate is, you know, we're spiritual entrepreneurs. That's what I've always referred to myself as. I've been a part of startups. You know, I'm an entrepreneur at my heart. In fact, if I'm not starting something, if I'm not creating some chaos, I get bored pretty rapidly.
Maintenance is boring.
That's right. That's right. And I want a team around me to help me do that. You got to do that. You know, and every organization has to grow up. We've both learned that, you know, over time as entrepreneurs. But I love what I do, and I love leadership, and I love health. I'm for healthy leaders and healthy organizations. And, you know, the last stint was to make a prayer-filled decision to hand off a megachurch that I birthed in my living room that was going great, you know, for the hope and potential of even doing something greater. And my coach told me, he said, Sean, change is hard because we often overestimate the value of what we have and we underestimate what we might gain by giving that up. Mm. So I gave up a very good thing, you know, for hope of something better. And it's been a wild ride these last 4 or 5 years, but I wouldn't do it any differently again.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. You said something that I think is key, very easy to gloss over. Listeners could miss it. You said, my coach said, and one of your contentions is every leader needs a coach.
Yeah.
And what I find so often is high-level leaders are kind of sequestered, they're isolated, they think they have to have all the answers, and they don't have anyone that's coaching them. So it sounds like you've had a coach for a while, and now you're getting to do that for others. And maybe you still have a coach.
Yeah, I do. I've got two or three coaches, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. And I know you do. So I tell leaders all the time, I lead with this. If you're listening to me train or coach, and you think to yourself, I've heard that somewhere before, it's definitely true. Mm-hmm. Because everything I know, I learned from someone else, and I've just had the opportunity to be able to be coached by some of the best faith-based leaders on the planet, and I've learned everything I know from those leaders, you know, and so I know what it did for me. I'm not smart enough to be successful that many different times in that many different facets and industries. It's because I've had great coaches in my life, so I know what it's done for me personally to look better than I am, and now to be able to bring that experience and wisdom for other leaders. I think learning leaders are growing leaders who lead growing organizations. Mm. If you stop learning, which is an entrepreneur, it's easy to get so busy you stop learning. If you stop learning, you'll stop growing. If you stop growing, sooner or later, the music will stop.
Sounds like a verse from 2 Timothy.
It is. It's true. It's absolutely true. It's biblical.
Yeah. Okay, so let's back up. Let's talk about, you didn't just all of a sudden start coaching leaders. You had to go out there and fail, I'm sure, some, succeed at a high level, fail again, succeed again. Walk us through, how did you get to CourageToLead.com?
Well, you know, first, you know, early on in my career, everything I touched had turned to gold in the marketplace. You know, God calls me to the ministry. I served a couple of traditional churches, felt called to kind of pioneer an entrepreneur, a more progressive model of church. It was the birth of the church planting movement, you know, 25, 30 years ago now. And those first 2 years, though, were the hardest 2 years of my life.
And you're in Atlanta at that
point. I'm in Atlanta. Yeah. And we broke about 400 people in attendance after year two. Twitter and Facebook wasn't around, our Instagram, so I thought we were the fastest growing church in America. You know, my church I grew up in was 150 years old, and we were about that size, so mm-hmm. I thought we had arrived, you know. And I'm lying in bed with my wife one night, and I say, honey, how do you think things are going? And I don't know if you've ever been where you kind of were fishing for a compliment with your wife, you know, yeah. And I was. I expect her to say, man, you're a great man of God, and this church is growing, and it's an honor to be seen with you in public or something like that. Instead, she said, you really want to know what I think? She said, I think you've allowed this church start turning into a workaholic, and you're never home. And I gained about 30 pounds those 2 years. You know, I'll never be an obese guy. I actually can hide some weight pretty good and get away with being a sloth, you know, like some people can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done that, and I was unhealthy in every way, and I was pastoring a church. And
how old were you at this point?
I was 31 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. We moved there to start the church when I was 28. So I just, normally when my wife would try to preach at me, I might be defensive. But it was like as she was speaking on this night, it was like scales fell off my eyes. And I just knew this is, she's speaking the truth. And I began to repent to God and repent to her. You know, make a long story short, if a leader has ever repented of their workaholism and redeemed all of that, I did that. And we won back our lives, our marriage, our ministry, our church, and learned how to run at a healthy pace. And I might have been able to build the church bigger and even faster. But thank God, I tell pastors all the time, I'm all for the Great Commission, just not at the expense of the Great Commandment.
Mm.
Yeah, let's not get the cart before the horse. And it's tempting as pastors as well to idolize church growth. You know, and you can idolize growth of a business at the expense of health of the business. And sooner or later, it'll bite you in the rear end, you know, as it does in church world as well. And so I'm thankful that when I handed the baton off 17 years later, that my wife liked me. And my kids love the church. You know, we ran the race at a healthy pace. And so it was really out of a desire to keep pastors sane, centered, and married that I started coaching.
So because of what you'd experienced and knowing you could easily leave that stuff at the altar in your pursuit of growth and success, you wanted to help other pastors find the same type of balance in your life that you had found.
To be healthy. You know, and as the leader goes, so goes the rest of the organization. So then how to build that healthy ethos, that healthy culture in an organization that doesn't wear everybody out and burn everybody out and suck the life out of everybody, but brings life and energy and vitality and vibrancy and growth and health to everybody who operates there. But it starts at the top.
All right. So you said when you handed off that church, so you grew that church in Atlanta. So at that pivot point with your wife, you didn't leave and start doing something else. Mm-hmm. You kept growing, but you worked on the rest of your life, which we're going to get into in a minute. So we'll get to there in a second. But let's talk about where did the church go from there? What size was it when you handed it off? And what did it look like going to coaching?
At that point, the church was about 400 people. And I actually told the church that Sunday, I went back and I said to them, I need to confess something to you guys that I've confessed to God and my wife. I had their attention now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I said, I have made myself available and accessible to you at the neglect of leading myself and my relationship with God and my relationship with my family. And I'm not going to be available and accessible to everybody all the time. I've already changed my cell phone number. And can I just say, leaping over, just to make sure everybody contextualizes this, in the marketplace, I see entrepreneurs all the time. That there's a difference between being an entrepreneur and a leader. It has everything to do with people and how you interact and relate to people. And a lot of leaders are what I call overexposed. Like they're involved in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in every meeting. And they have to make every decision. You know, and Andy Stanley was one of my coaches there for about a decade. He said, Sean, when you start an enterprise, when you start a church, you start an organization, you have to do everything. The longer you do everything, though, you become the lid on its growth.
That's right.
And I realized that was me. I was part of the problem. Making myself, I had to be the center of the universe and decide everything and be at everything and be available all the time. And I just told the church, I'm not going to do it anymore. And I thought they would throw things at me. Instead, we got our first standing ovation in the history of the church. And I had two leaders, two men came up to me after the service and said, I'm glad you shared what you shared today because we've been concerned about you.
Mm.
You know, and I see leaders all the time get burned out. The family gets wobbly. You know, the whole culture gets wobbly because they are the center of the universe. Entrepreneurs can tend to be control freaks as well. I am one. Hi, my name is Sean. I'm a recovery control freak, you know. And we don't know how to let go. And it's not only to our fault, it's to the entire organization's fault at some level. You can't build a team if you don't empower them. You can't give responsibility without authority. And I realized I had to do that in my church, you know, and now I've been, and we did it. And as we did it, man, church doubled in about a year. And we kind of never looked back.
Yeah, and yeah. You're giving opportunity to your people because now they're learning new skill sets. You're handing things off. You're truly delegating. You know what's interesting about that control freak thing? It really comes from we get addicted to the validation that we have.
It's answers. Very true. We like to be needed more than we realize.
Yes.
You know, we complain about it, but it's an idol in our own life to be needed, to be affirmed, to solve the problem. We feel like, you know, we feel more validated and value in that. And you got to die to that, you know. And I'll have leaders say to me, but I enjoy doing that. And my response is always, what's that got to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta die to that. You got to let go of your own desires to do what's best for the organization.
And if you can cross that bridge, you can get validated by seeing your people grow.
That's the
and
fun.
And it's way more fun.
That's actually the right? fun. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. Because then you see them growing and doing things. And most of the time, they do them way better than you did them anyway, in my experience. Has that been your
and
experience?
And the whole work environment becomes so much more fun. Yeah. I mean, you become a life-giving leader rather than that person that, like, just sucks the energy out of the room. And I was that guy. I was that guy. I mean, I was blowing up staff and chewing people out and, you know, just using people to get the work done. I was a mean, agitated cuss because I wasn't taking my day off. You know, I didn't have margin in my life. You know, and you end up being agitated and angry and frustrated. One of the things my wife said to me on that night was she said, Sean, you never even laugh anymore. You never smile anymore. She said, you used to be the life of the party. And now, like, everything's wrong with everyone and everything all the time.
Mm.
And I just knew she was right. You know, I had become this angry, frustrated person, and I was managing everybody to death. And thank God, you know, through my wife, you know, I was able to see the light and turn the corner and get some great coaching, you know, and nail down some old, you know, nail some habits and chart a new path.
Well, anytime your spouse says, do you really want to know what I think? I mean, those are some dangerous words for sure. All right, so you grow the church, you hand it off, you have a successor come in, and you start coaching. So walk me through kind of what that journey's look like to where you are now. Yeah. And I know you're coaching pastors for sure, but you're also coaching executives in what I call the four purpose space. You called spiritual entrepreneur, same thing, same terminology.
Yeah, like so... it. We started formally coaching pastors back in 2002, 2003, just how to stay healthy and how to prioritize and then how to build a healthy ethos culture, you know, in the team and the organization, how to build a team, you know, believe it or not, seminary, you know, they don't teach you how to lead a meeting. They don't teach you how to review your teammates and be more honest with them about expectations and raise the bar. And they don't teach you how to fire people either, you know, which all those things are necessary. So we began to teach all that stuff. In the meantime, like I always feel like an executive trapped in a pastor's body. And I was involved in the Rotary Club and the Chamber of Commerce, sat on the board of a hospital and a college. And, you know, I had a lot of friends outside the church in the business community. And we started a conference and a leadership conference, and business people in the community were causing traffic jams during the week for this leadership conference. And leaders would ask me, like, what do you teach these pastors, you know, when they come in? And we began to talk about what we now call
the three gears of growth. This idea that culture and team and systems are separate but interdependent gears. And business people begin to say, hey, like we could benefit from a talk on that. Would you come and spend some time, you know, with our team, with our board, whatever? So I began to do that. And I realized, kind of like John Maxwell, I'm not as smart as John, but the guy who was his executive pastor and started in the Enjoy Life Club years ago. You remember those cassette tapes and CDs? His partner, Dan Ryland, was one of my coaches, you know, taught me a lot of what I know. And we just realized over time, like, I'm a pretty good pastor, but I'm a really good coach. It's a gifting thing. It's a gifting thing. And so I went to my wife the first time in 2009 and said, what if we handed off the church and I just taught leaders full time? And she said, are you kidding me? We're just now enjoying this.
we got a little margin.
Yeah, we just got back to where we were like 20 years ago. You know, you're telling me you want to leave again. I tell leaders all the time, never has a woman walked into her husband and said, hey, why don't we move and you change jobs? You know, it's always the guy who wants to do something crazy, you know. And so, but God began that dialogue in our lives. You know, the recession was right in there. You know, we knew we needed to lead our church through that. After all that was over, I just felt it was time, you know. And Henry Cloud says in his book, Necessary Endings, by the way, he says it takes a healthy, self-aware leader to recognize it's time to go before everyone else recognizes it. Mm. You know, and so when I started Courage to Lead, I had a leader say to me, he said, build it so you can sell it. I'm like, wait a minute. This is like my, like, retirement career, if you will, at 45 years old even. But he said, no. If you may not ever want to sell it, but if you'll build it as if you're going to sell it, you won't just build it around you. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we began to scale our coaching from day one, so that it's not all on my shoulders. And hopefully, once again, one day I can hand the baton off and it doesn't crumble without me.
Right. Well, and especially in the coaching industry, because it's well known for a guru and a backpack.
You're right.
Right. And it's a lifestyle business, and it is the founder's talents, and he can't scale at all because no one can speak the language or do what he does.
And there are a bunch of consultants operating out of the back of their, you know, the trunk of their car, you know, out there. And it lives and dies with that one person, you know, with that entrepreneur. And so, you know, the challenge for entrepreneurs is really to reproduce yourself. To build a business, mm-hmm. to build a true organization, it can't be all on you. You know, you got to multiply and reproduce yourself, which takes time and effort and intentionality and all that.
So tell me a little bit now about your business. You've got how many coaches working for you? How many clients? What does it look like?
Yeah, so we've got 17 coaches from Los Angeles to Chicago and, you know, Indianapolis, dotted down into the South, both ministry and marketplace. It's about 50-50 now. In terms of our revenue and client load, because leadership growth and organizational health is scalable. Mm-hmm. And with especially with the invention of the mega church 30 years ago, frankly, the issues the mega church pastor faces and the CEO of a fast growing young company, it's not much different. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously pastors have a little bit heightened spiritual bullseye on their shoulders, you know, on their backsides. But CEOs, man, I mean, the evil one would love to take them down as well. So we don't wear Christianity on our sleeve, but we end up attracting, because of my resume and bio, you know, a lot of faith-based leaders. I had a CEO of a multi-million dollar company at offices in Birmingham and Nashville. He said, I don't feel called to be a pastor, but I've been told I'm a bully. And I would love to learn, like, how to pastor my people better. I was like, you don't even know what you're asking, but the word pastor means shepherd. And I think if you're a CEO, you do have a flock. You are shepherding people every single week. And they're either going to hate you and hate their job, or find meaning and satisfaction and fulfillment in their job. And you have that power in your hands. So it's really fun to affect their home life, you know, and help them live life in rhythm, I call it, and be successful at home, but also create a rocking environment at work. You know, because when things are going great at work and they're not great at home, you don't feel successful. Mm-hmm. You know, but if things are going bad here and good there, you know, it takes both, I think. So that's the power the CEO has to create that.
So at Courage to Lead, you have several different products and coaching techniques, but you got some books, you got a podcast, you got a lot of ways that you're pouring into leaders. In fact, the only reason you and I are even talking right now is Instagram, because you're ubiquitous on Instagram. You started commenting on my stuff. I started commenting on your stuff. Our experience, our messages are so similar. Talk about some of the things you do to equip leaders, like what tools you use.
Yeah, so we finally put some of it down in print. I just released my third book called Measuring Success, Your Path to Success, Satisfaction, and Leading Yourself to the Next Level. It's the whole personal leadership side. And it's really a personal leadership manual where I tell my story, warts and bruises, but also what I've learned coaching now thousands of faith-based leaders. And then in 2016, my last book was called Be Mean About the Vision. And it was all about how you protect the vision. I'm not a big fan of vision statements. People spend years working on those. But the statement is just the beginning. Then you've got to drill it down into every organization and protect it, you know, from leaking and being hijacked and all of that stuff. So that's the whole organizational health, you know, side of what we do. And then everything else we do is free. You know, the podcast, the social media, you know, we want to help as many leaders, coach them from a distance. But the bread and butter for us, the end game for us always is one-on-one coaching with a leader and or their organization. You know, we'd love to get our hands on both.
Okay. Well, let's transition. And you've already touched on so many of these topics. This is going to be great. But let's go back to that night where your wife told you the brutal, honest truth, yeah. Right? Could have gone a bunch of different ways. Thankfully, God and his sovereignty.
I think it did go every way except divorce.
But he softened your heart to actually hear it and not fight back. But one of the things she addressed, or you quickly admitted to, was body had gotten out of place for you. Put on 30 pounds and probably approaching hypertension and some of those things. What do you do to equip yourself across the body domain, and how does that serve you to continue to coach at a high level and continue to model to others how to coach at a high level?
Yeah, so it's very spiritual for me today. It wasn't then. I like to separate it. I'm ashamed to say there was a time as a pastor where I boasted about my bad eating habits and my lack of exercise. I made a joke about it.
Because you could get away with it.
Because, right? I could get away with it.
Yeah.
And that's you know, that's a blessing and a curse that you can kind of get away with it and never be obese due to good genetics. But I knew I wasn't healthy, you know, and that was a longer progressive journey for me to get physically healthy. But it's been 6 years ago now I made the decision to go vegan. And so I haven't had meat or dairy in 6 years.
Wow.
Come November. So my mother died with cancer on her 40th birthday. I was 16. I had some of the same digestive issues. I worked out hit and miss. I still didn't eat all that well, though, my 30s. And my 40th birthday came, and we went to get my term life insurance policy renewed at 40. He said, "Yay, cholesterol's bumping up there. It's about time to get on medication." That's exactly what he said. Mm-hmm. And I thought, are you kidding me? Take a number. Get in line. It's about time. Like, this is what I've got to do for the rest of my life. So that was like one little chink in the armor where I'm like. So finally, I began to pray and research about it. And I just, you know, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. You've heard it a lot. And I'm like, cancer may get me. It's in my genes. You know, but it's not going to get me because I'm stupid. And I just decided to take back my life and get really serious about not only exercise. I'd always kind of always been an athlete and exercise off and on, but get more discipline in that. But then what I put in my body, and it was spiritual for me. Your body's a temple. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to cut short my ministry, my effectiveness, my relevancy to the world. I don't want to do anything that's going to cut that short. So I finally did add some fish to my diet last year. So I'm not a vegan anymore. You can't label me. You know, I did add fish about a year ago. So I would not often, but I add fish to my diet. And that for me, you know, keeps me from going crazy because I still love food. I love food. And sometimes I eat too much. But staying in those lines actually helps me eat more of the right things.
Sure. Or you're going to starve.
Or I'm going to starve.
Yeah.
I'm going to starve.
So in the last 6 years, that transition, I mean, that's a pretty aggressive change. Most people cannot live that lifestyle for 6 years.
Flip the switch, man.
That's amazing. What have you experienced from an energy level, from a productivity level, from a clear-headed being able to think and create? Like, how has that?
It changed my life. I mean, I had no idea. Like, I thought it's going to help me not get cancer, but I didn't know what it would do for me emotionally. You know, when you start, one area of discipline flows over into another area of discipline, but one area of satisfaction flow. When you feel like you're taking good care of yourself, like as an entrepreneur, you feel more confident.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk into a room, it's amazing. And I underestimated that. Just the confidence that it gives you to know you're taking care of your body on a different level. You know, and so that was part of it. But I've torn both my ACLs earlier in my athletic career, multiple knee surgeries. I had pretty bad arthritis in both knees, almost crippling at times. I would cry.
Mm.
My knees would hurt so bad at night. Do you know in the last 6 years I've had zero arthritis in my knees?
All the inflammation gone.
All the inflammation left my legs. Mm. My knees never hurt me anymore. I didn't even know that was a possible benefit.
Mm.
You know, things like that happen that are just crazy. You know, that I'm in way better shape than I was 10 years ago.
Well, I love what you said, how success in one area flows into the next. And that's what I love about the body domain is it's a good place to start. Like if you feel like your life is out of control, mastering just your physical routine can give you so much momentum in everything else. And I just think it's a great example to start with, that you getting that core habit really led to you being able to do what you've done in all these other areas.
I think we get condemned for us, you know, because I'm not disciplined spiritually, I'm not disciplined relationally, I'm not disciplined, you know, physically, whatever. But if people can just decide, I'm going to fix one area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's physical, if it's financial, great. If it's spiritual, just get disciplined in one area. Pick an area and go all out. The great thing about physical is you can see results visibly.
You don't have to rely on someone else potentially. Because if you pick your marriage, I mean, there is another 50% equation in there.
Yeah.
Picking body is just an awesome place to start.
But then you start feeling the confidence to tackle these other areas.
All right, let's talk about the other areas. Balance, mentioned you've been married for 25 years now.
Almost 26 now.
I'm a little bit behind you. We're about to celebrate 20. And you call her your best friend. And I think any long-lasting marriage, that better be the relationship. But talk about her. Obviously, she was huge at this inflection point in your life to speak truth into you. Your kids, just what your family dynamic looks like.
Yeah, so we have the same Myers-Briggs profile. So you've heard opposites attract.
Yes.
So we've had to work at our relationship. I think every great relationship requires work, but we've worked at it. And we've decided, you know, we want to fight rather than have artificial harmony. So we've had some really good fights. We call it intense fellowship. But the beauty about that is, like, when you will speak the truth to each other and even share your frustrations and wounds with each other, like, you're able to resolve issues. We never want to be one of those couples that's 75 years old in a restaurant. You've seen them where you go in and sit down and they don't speak to each other the entire meal.
Yes.
Like, they're still married, but they decided at some point just to live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
And we never want that, you know. So we're willing to fight for intimacy. And we've done that for 26 years. And she is my best friend and partner. And we can talk to each other about, you know, anything and everything. And then for our kids, you know, you fight for your kids. It's volatile. I got 20, 16, and 15 years old. But today they all love the Lord and they love the church. And, you know, they respect me because there's not a dichotomy between my public life and my private life. And there were moments where I got that wrong. And they know when I'm home, I'm home.
Mm.
When I'm home, I'm home. One of the things Tricia said to me 20 years ago, 21 years ago, she said, every day when you walk in the door, you're still on your phone. And we run to the door to see you, and you're like still working.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the specific commitment to her. I would never walk in the door again, still on my phone. And I've kept that commitment. I've never violated it. So sometimes I have to circle the neighborhood a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But when I walk in the door, I'm home. And psychologists tell us that if you work outside the home, your first 7 minutes in the home dictates the temperature and tone for the whole family the rest of the evening. Mm. So for me to pause and make that transition, you know, from professional life to personal life and be fully present and fully engaged and fully husband, father, and all that stuff, that's work, you know. But when I go home, I'm cognizant of the fact I set that tone. I'm either going to ruin it or add energy and breath to it. And I try to do that.
That's great. And, you know, the thing about that is it's easy to talk about. It's hard to execute.
It is.
Because I imagine there's many times you're in mid-call and, oh, goodness, I got to wrap this up.
It's hard. And then, you know, and sometimes you're tired, you're frustrated, you're angry, you know, it's been a bad day, you're discouraged, it hasn't gone well, you lost a client, whatever. And there's been many times I've gripped my steering wheel, you know, knowing there probably going to be some drama behind that door, you know. Lord, I'm going in. You know, help me, help me. You know, I need supernatural strength. But, you know, if we're honest, that comes easy for us at work sometimes at home. And we don't bring our best at home. Mm-hmm. Some people, some young entrepreneurs, need to find another gear at work. Hello. Mm-hmm. You know, but then the rest of us need to find another gear at home as well. They're both important.
Help us with some practical ways that you've prioritized family. Do you do date nights? Do you do one-on-one time with your kids? Do you have Bible study time with your kids? Like, how have you put in some foundational keystone habits to make sure that you don't get back to that 31-year-old version of yourself?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of specificity. You know, one of the things my wife said to me was, hey, I partner with you in everything you want to do, but I don't feel partnered with at home. So we begin to dialogue with specificity. What does that look like? And so we drew up, this is going to blow your mind, we drew up a 14-point covenant to God and to each other. The cell phone thing was on the list. And I asked her questions like, okay, so what does partnering at home with you look like? What would communicate to you that I'm your partner? And she said, well, if you would fix breakfast for the kids and empty the dishwasher, like that would help. Us men, like we need lists. Like tell me what to
Absolutely.
Do. You know, because honestly, there have been times when I thought I was doing better. I thought I was doing a great job. And then we have a blow up because she says, you never help out around here. I was like, whoa, that's not true either. I do help out. It's not meeting your expectations. Mm-hmm. So there's specificity that needs to happen. And I'm dialogue it out, write it down, you know. And we did. And so I made a list of 14 things that I was going to do. I would not be out away from home more than two nights a week. You know, I'd fix the kids' breakfast. I'd take out the trash. I'd do this. I'd do that. Do this. I'd not walk in the door on my cell phone. All of these things were things. I signed my name to it and put it on the refrigerator for 18 months. Mm. Did I violate that from time to time? Yes, but it was great accountability, you know. And so I'm a big fan of, you've heard in the business world, good paper makes good friends, mm-hmm. you know. We put it on paper. Like here's the kind of how we're going to covenant to roll together and navigate and dialogue our roles. And as life stations with your kids change, the system has got to change.
Yeah, it's got a course for it.
You start, it's like in a business, you feel the tension starts arising when the family outgrows that system, you know, and so you have to sit back down. Okay, most relational tensions are actually systems tensions in disguise. So, hey, what was working is not working. You know, there's new tension, there's new frustrations. Let's rework, redialogue, you know, our roles and what we're going to do and how we're going to do it as the kids grow up. And then things are at peace again, you know, for the next system. We were really, really, really hard on that. I took responsibility for date night and family night. My wife is the type, she always feels guilty spending money. She always feels guilty leaving the kids. And so I'm like, part of my spiritual leadership role is we're going. Mm-hmm. We got the money. We got the time. I took care of childcare. You know, I plan our vacations. I don't wait till things slow down. take responsibility for that as the leader, you know, as the spiritual leader of my home. And that's what, this is what we're going to do. Not in a domineering kind of way. And there's so many times where Trisha's gotten out and she's like, underestimated how much I needed this. You know what I'm saying?
Just happened to me last quarter. We had a 4-day getaway and she did not want to go. We were going to miss 2 baseball games. She was having all the mom guilt in the world. And we weren't on that beach more than 30 minutes. She said, thank you so much for forcing me to
come. It's good. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Did Trisha also have a 14-point document, or was this one-sided, this is what I'm going to do?
No, it was both roles.
Okay.
It was both roles. What she's going to do. I was sinning way more than she was. But there were, the great thing about what we set into place was, no longer could she say, you don't help out, you don't partner, you know, you're never home, you know, all of those things, mm-hmm. because it actually protected me too. You know, if I'm out those 2 nights a week and she's still whining and complaining, well, then that's not fair either to me. Mm-hmm. Because we did say, you know, I could be out a couple of nights a week for meetings and this or working late or whatever. But the rest of the time, I'm going to be home. You know, I'm going to go. So it was both of us, her saying, I'm going to give you a break, you know, and not ever, because both of us are recovering perfectionists. And if you're not careful, like, nothing's ever good enough. Your spouse can never, you know, jump over the hoop. And so it was great to feel as a man like I'm winning. You give me a list. Men are that dumb. We need a list.
We do.
We just need a list. And I got a list, and it just helped me. It just helped me know that I'm winning and be successful. And then we had to debate and dialogue and change some things around over time, but we did that. And then at a certain point, it doesn't have to be in writing anymore.
Right.
It becomes a natural rhythm and culture in your life.
Well, I can so relate as the husband who thinks he's crushing it to get that comment from my wife. This is blanket. You don't do X. You're not helping me at all.
A lot of superlatives come out in that moment.
Oh my gosh, it just says, oh my God, are you kidding? I thought I was doing this and this and this and this. So yeah, we've walked through very similar type of conversations. However, we've never created a document. We did go through a marriage class that walked us through some of that, but there was never a document created, but we could probably take that to the next level.
It's a covenant. You know, it's kind of a, just so we're really clear on what we're trying to do and what we're trying to build and the values we're going to hold each other accountable to. And it does give me something to be accountable to.
And I imagine when you're working with leaders, that's a very clear place where they probably have tension at home that's affecting how they're showing up at work, and it's affecting how they're showing up with their kids.
And the tendency when you start the organization, you know, is like when we get to here, mm-hmm. like I bought into that lie. So we had not been on a date. We had not taken a vacation in 2 years when everything hit the fan with us. And so I realized, like, you can buy one of the biggest lies from hell I ever believed is it'll be easier when we get to here.
Right.
Has here, it gotten easier as Iron Tribe has grown?
Here it just keeps moving.
It just keeps moving, and it's more complex.
Yep.
More zeros, more staff. You know, you're never there. So if you don't learn to enjoy the journey and celebrate the small wins and the victories and begin to live successfully now, you will not steward, you know, success the way the world defines it. You know, later it'll actually crumble. Mm-hmm. It happens with pastors. It happens with CEOs. It happens with companies. You know, if the best thing you can do is focus on health, and healthy things grow. Mm-hmm. And but sometimes we get those two backwards, and we grow at the expense of health. And sooner or later, it'll bite you and everybody around you.
You can only rob that for so long before the piper comes collecting.
You reap what you sow.
That's
man.
Right.
It's biblical.
So before we leave the balance domain, talk about your kids a little bit. How do you foster a healthy relationship with them as a whole? But also, now I like to ask everybody, how do you carve out the time for one-on-one time with kids? Because that seems to be a pretty common challenge, at least for me.
Yeah, we had 2 girls, and I was satisfied with that. And then we got surprised with a boy the third time. But I got a boy, you know, the third time. And I'm taking him out this afternoon. We're going to 2nd Charles. He's my comic book and video game buddy, you know. So I fight for one-on-one time. I fight for family time. We're all going to do our family night Friday night at 2016 and 15. I make them hang out with their uncool dad. It's just like my wife. Like, they need it more than they think they do. Mm-hmm. So I fight for that family time together. And now they're getting to that age where their boyfriends and girlfriends are invited. You know, I want them to see our healthy ethos and culture because they probably didn't have one.
Very likely.
Odds are.
Yes.
I want them to see what it's like to have a healthy family. And then, you know, I'm fighting to have one-on-one time, not only with my wife, you know, but with each of my kids. And, you know, when they're teenagers, they think they're too cool to hang out with you. But they want it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants it. Mm-hmm. They need it. And they need it. And I'm always coaching them. You know, now to set some people free and give them permission, you know, we were pastors, okay, and leaders, but we've never, like, had sit-down, regular Bible studies and devotions. If you think about Jesus and the disciples, like, they didn't have Lifeway, and somehow, you know, they did discipleship. You know, it was as you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was constantly coaching, critiquing. No, Peter, don't say that. That's stupid, you know. You know, and you know, this, that you've heard it said, this is the way it is, and coaching them as they walk in life. And that's been more our approach to discipleship, of just being and walking with them and coaching them on the spot, of sharpening them all the time. And so that's what we're doing. It sometimes we sound like Charlie Brown's teacher, but thank God, you know, it's sunk in, you know, over time. So I fight for one-on-one time. My daughter Hannah came in, you know, at midnight last night from her boyfriend. So I went up this morning and sat by her in her bathroom just so I could have 15 or 20 minutes to debrief from her day, you know, yesterday. I'm real cognizant of that. Just have that one-on-one time. Before you know it, she's opening up, talking to me about things. So sometimes a parent, like, you don't stop being their parent, but you sort of resign. You just give up because it's just hard.
It is hard. Every stage.
It's hard, man. It's hard, and you don't feel like they value you like you value them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the validation, you know, that you want, and your tendency is just like live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
Let them stay up there in their closed doors. But I fight to have that intimacy with our kids.
So tempting to think, man, just once could they ask about my day and mean it, right?
I know. They're so
nice. I mean, I'm sure that day comes further down the road.
You know, science, you know this. I mean, you studied the body, but their brains are not fully formed. You know, and I actually joke about the fact, I think it's the part of brain that cares about other people that hasn't developed yet.
That comes last.
That comes last. But then, you know, by the time they turn 20, you know, you start seeing them to get it. It starts clicking, you know, and that's very, you know, validating.
All right, so final domain. I saved it for last. I always do because it's the most important, and that's your being domain, your connection with Christ. And with you, we've been talking about that pretty much the whole time because half of your business is devoted to that. But you said something early on. I want you to unpack it because it was a great one-liner, and it's quick to throw out there. But I really want to make sure everybody hears the power in what you said. And you said you're all about the Great Commission, but not at the expense of the Great Commandment.
Yeah.
So that's a great way just to lead into your relationship with Christ and how it really undergirds everything about what you do.
Yeah, so I don't have many regrets of my time of being a actual pastor of a church. Really, I just have one. And that is that I probably operated too much in the flesh and not enough in the spirit. And when I'm talking about fulfilling the Great Commission, there's a difference between working for God and doing something by God, to be recognized, to be noticed, to be affirmed, to be validated by God, to earn His approval. That's actually the very basis of religion. Religion is trying to live in such a way that God will be happy with me. But you know, you got David Platt on. The whole idea of the gospel is that you don't have to do anything to earn God's approval.
Mm.
Jesus did that. But as a pastor, you can get caught on that treadmill just as easy as you can being an entrepreneur or a CEO. You know, to get up and work for the glory of God rather than, you know, so I got up. You know, I woke up earlier than usual this morning, 4 a.m. My alarm clock didn't go off. I just couldn't sleep anymore, so I just got up and started my day. But I just resign every day. I resign now as the founder and CEO of CourageElite.com. Just, Lord, I need you to live and breathe through me. I can do nothing apart from you. Actually, I could do a lot of things, but nothing of eternal value. Mm. So help me. My tendency is build my thing today, conquer my world, do my task list, and it'll all be about me. You know, that's working for God, you know, rather than living and beating and breathing. And we're tempted every day. I think it's why Jesus said, deny every day, deny yourself, daily take up your cross and follow me. And for me, that's a daily exercise. Mm. I do it really good from about 5 a.m. to about 11 a.m. and start getting more about me as the hours go on, you know, by the end of the day.
Yes.
And then I have to start over, reset the next day, resign from the CEO of my life, and put him back on. And when I do that, man, my everything goes better in my life.
So you're talking about the concept of abiding, right? John 15, he's the root. He provides the nourishment. We don't manufacture fruit, like it's because of the Spirit. So can you help us just practically, how do you abide? Is that time in the Word? Is that prayer? Is it a bunch of different things? How do you abide?
So this is also scientifically true, okay? So Jesus, when he said, I am the vine, you are the branches, he probably was talking about a grapevine. And he said, if you abide in me and I abide in you, you'll bear much fruit, okay? He actually didn't tell us ever to go bear fruit.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll produce the fruit. So when we start trying to produce the fruit, that's when we get in trouble. Most of our anxiety, most of our stress, disillusionment, discouragement, depression, we're trying to produce the fruit rather than stay close to him. So for me, this will encourage and liberate a lot of people. For me as an entrepreneur, that abiding, like it has to be, I have to change it up. If I get in a religious routine and I'm doing the same thing the same way, I don't even like the language of quiet time. Mm-hmm. It's not in the Bible anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have a quiet time and miss Jesus. You know, he said, told the Pharisees, he said, you look to the scriptures thinking you're going to get all this knowledge, but the scriptures talk about me. You know, it's a person. It's not a routine. It's a person. So I want to change up what that looks like for me. So I go on prayer walks early in the morning. I talk out loud to God. People probably think I've been drinking. You know, I journal sometimes. Sometimes I don't journal. Sometimes I get on my knees. Sometimes I walk around. Sometimes I'm doing a Bible reading plan. Sometimes I'm not. You know, I always read a devotional type book, and then I'm reading leadership. All that's part of becoming the best version of myself, you know, is like my responsibility. And I want God to help inform that.
But no matter what you're doing, you are connecting with him.
That's the important
thing. As your higher source, your higher power, the ability to work through you and produce the fruit every day in some way, you're connecting. And probably throughout the day, you know, pray continuously, pray without ceasing. I'm sure that's part of it.
If you think about it, like us CEOs, entrepreneurs, that's the only time of the day we really submit to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is under our authority. So I think every great person who has a lot of authority, you know, ought to have that place daily where they place themselves under authority. To me, that's very powerful. You know, when you can live under authority and it exercise authority, it actually allows you to wield authority in a very healthy way, in a healthier way. You're nicer, you're kinder, you're gentler, you know, you're just all of that.
That's a good word. What would you say to the listener who is a hard charger, who's trying to create something in their life or is creating or has created, but has done it at the expense of some of these other domains? The 31 version of yourself, like, where did they start? How did they, you know, we talked a little bit about that.
There's no right way or wrong way. You know, it's not extrovert versus introvert, which, by the way, the Myers-Briggs profile, 51% of every person who's ever taken is an introvert. You know, so it's not extrovert or introvert, you know, or hard charging and not hard charging. I say in the book, my book, Measuring Success, our greatest assets outside his lordship become our greatest liabilities. So it's taking how we're wired and surrendering it and submitting it to him and asking him to use it. And, you know, every personality profile test tells you, like, this can be a good trait, but there's also a dark side to this trait. And the prayer every day is, Lord, let me use this trait, you know, for good. And that's what I want to do. And I'm great for some mutual accountability. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I love coaching so much is, you know, they can watch your life. And if they see you start acting like a jackass, can I say that on this podcast?
Of course.
If they see you start acting like that, they're like, dude, you made two sarcastic jokes about your wife tonight that did not honor her. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or you just walked into that room and just cut the knees out from under your top people. You know, everything they've been working on. Because you're a micromanager. You know, and you got to stop it. And, like, we all need that. We all need that. And, you know, my coaches have blistered me at times, too. And it's good for it. Iron sharpens iron. One friend sharpens another.
I'm so glad you mentioned accountability. I'm glad we didn't leave this talk without talking about that. Because I say on here, find your tribe. Like, that's one of my things. And I have brought this podcast equipment to my quarterly retreat with my guys that I get together, and we get real. And we call each other out, and we share what's going on in our lives. And this goes back to what we talked about earlier, is a lot of leaders live in isolation because they really fear being exposed.
Yep.
So what is your recommendation? I mean, you talked about it. Is it an accountability group? Is it an accountability partner? Is it a coach? Is it all those things? What do you generally recommend?
Find a place. It's like, what exercise program will work? They will all work if you're committed to them. So find a place, a safe place to stretch the muscle. Maybe it's counseling to start with. Maybe it is a coach. You know, maybe it is your spouse. Maybe it is a friend. Maybe it is a spiritual mentor. Maybe it is being in a small group at church. Mm-hmm. Find a place where you can stretch the muscle. My pastor, Chris Hodges, says you're only as safe as your secrets. You know, and so the less of those you can have, the better. And that takes a while to get there. And the number one mistake I see leaders make is isolation. And I think it's why most entrepreneurs quit right before the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're isolated, you're going to be tempted to quit. I was too dumb to
every
quit.
Day.
The only reason I've been successful is I was too dumb to quit, you know, because I had great coaches. I can't tell you how many times I went into one of my coaches with my tail between my legs, dragging myself there, thinking about quitting, sharing with them I'm telling them thinking about quitting, and coming away every time like, no, I can do this.
Mm.
No, somebody believes in me. I got this. I can do this. You know, they believe in me. I believe in myself again. I got my swagger back. And I just think relationships are so vital for that. If you think about the church, okay, especially in the digital age, like, we can sing songs in the shower. Like, I sound better. I can watch sermons online. Yes. Okay. So why do we need the church? I think the church was created primarily because we need each other.
Yes, we do.
We need each other. And I need people. I need relationships. I need somebody who's not as far along as I am. It doesn't need to be all about me and people pouring into me. I need to have some people I'm pouring into. And I need some people who are further along than I am helping me. To me, that's how simple discipleship really is.
All right, well, my final question. At your stage of the game, you're coaching others. You've got your dream business you're creating. But you also mentioned you're still getting coached. So give us an idea. What are you, at the top of your game, what are you currently getting coached on?
Yeah, so I have two executive coaches that, you know, that are teaching me. I had never scaled a business before, you know, so what do you not know how to do? What do you suck at? You know, what are you clueless about? The great thing about our world today is you can always find someone who's done it, been successful at it, who maybe were screwing it up at some point and have redeemed that and are winning in that area of the life. They're further along than you. And so I've just always had that in my life. You know, when I was a pastor, I always had like a generosity mentor. You know, I had a spiritual mentor. I had a leadership mentor, you know, for each of these major facets of my life. Now it's like professional, spiritual, financial, organizational. Like, I've got several different guys that I connect with at various levels that are very niched in my life. They help me with a vital spoke of the wheel, so to speak. And help me grow. And that way, with my questions, I don't wear them out.
Mm-hmm.
I spread the load a little bit. And each of them can help me in a significant, specific area. And I think that's really good. That's why we only just do leadership and organizational health. You know, there's some power to that, mm-hmm. staying in your lane.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sum up what I've been teaching on this show, which is to really build something that's sustainable and lasting, you have to be equipped in body, balance, and being. That's where the power comes from to build. And if you try to build at the expense of those other three, it's going to be a long and painful road. Yeah. Because what does it mean? I mean, what does it mean to build the biggest coaching organization, to have the most Iron Tribe franchises, if we do it at the expense of our body and have type 2 diabetes and, you know, horrible chronic diseases, or we burn down our marriages in the process, or even worse, we walk away from our faith and pursue our own glory? Like, it means nothing, right? Nothing. The only things are the last word of God and souls of men. And so you have inspired me today. It's been a great conversation. Really appreciate you carving out some time to sit down with us.
Hey, I appreciate what you do and the calling that you have in this space. You're doing more than building chiseled bodies.
Yes.
You know, you're building people and helping people realize their calling. So thank you.
How can we follow you? CourageToLead.com?
Yeah, CourageToLead.com. Facebook and Instagram, at SeanLovejoy1.
And there's a lot of good content, so I recommend you follow. Thank you.
Thank you, man.